and the cuckoo's cry in memory. Guinevere bent her head to hide tears. Arthur's head was lowered, his eyes covered by his hand. Morgaine was staring straight ahead, and Guinevere could see the stripes of tears making wet streaks down her face. Arthur rose and came around the table. He put his arms round Lancelot and said in a voice that wasn't steady,
"But you are again with your king and your friend Galahad."
The old bitterness stabbed at Guinevere's heart. He sang of his king, not of his queen and his love. His love for me was never more than a part of his love for Arthur. She closed her eyes, unwilling to see them embrace.
"That was beautiful," said Morgause softly. "Who would ever think that a Saxon brute could write music like that? It must have been Lancelot after all."
Lancelot shook his head.
"The music is theirs, and the words only a poor echo of their own."
A voice that was like an echo of Lancelot's said gently,
"But there are poets and musicians among the Saxons, as well as warriors, my lady."
And Guinevere turned toward the voice. A young man in dark clothing, slender, dark-haired, a blur beyond her sight, but the voice, accented softly with the tones of the North Country, still sounded like Lancelot's, the very pitch and timbre of his.
Arthur beckoned him forward. "There sits one at my table I do not know, and at a family party that isn't right. Queen Morgause?"
She stood up in her place.
"I had meant to present him to you before we went to table, but you were busy talking with old friends, my king. This is Morgaine's son, who was fostered at my court, Gwydion."
The youth came forward and bowed.
"King Arthur," he said,
in the warm voice that was like an echo of Lancelot's. For a moment, a dizzy joy struck through Guinevere. This was Lancelot's son, surely, not Arthur's. And then she recalled that Morgaine's aunt, Vivian, was Lancelot's mother too. Arthur embraced the youth. He said, in a voice too shaken to be audible 3 yards distant,
"The son of my dearly beloved sister shall be received as a son at my own court, Gwydion. Come and sit beside me, lad."
Guinevere looked at Morgaine. She had spots of crimson on her cheek, as bright as if they were painted, and she was worrying her lower lip between her small, sharp teeth. Had Morgause not prepared her, then, to see her son presented to his father? No, to the king, Guinevere reminded herself sharply. There was no reason to think the boy had any idea who his father was. Though, if he had ever looked in a mirror, no doubt he would come to believe, whatever anyone might say, that he was Lancelot's son. Not a boy, after all. He must be near enough to 25. He was a man.
"Your cousin Galahad," Arthur said,
and Galahad impulsively put out his hand.
"You are closer kin to the king than I, cousin. You have a better right than I to be where I am now," he said, with boyish spontaneity. "I wonder you don't hate me."
Gwydion smiled and said,
"How do you know I don't, cousin?"
And for a moment Guinevere was jolted until she saw the smile. Yes, he was Morgaine's son. He had the cat smile she could show sometimes. Galahad blinked, then decided the words were meant as a jest. Guinevere could follow Galahad's transparent thoughts. "Is this my father's son? Is Gwydion my bastard brother by Queen Morgaine?" He looked hurt, too, like a puppy whose playful proffer of friendship has been rebuffed.
"No, cousin," Gwydion said. "What you are thinking isn't true."
Guinevere thought, her breath catching in her throat, that he even had Lancelot's sudden, breathtaking smile that transformed a rather dark and sombre face into an overwhelming brilliance, as if a ray of sun had come out and transformed it. Galahad said defensively,
"I wasn't. I didn't."
"No," said Gwydion kindly, "you didn't say anything. But it is all too obvious what you were thinking, and what everyone in this room must be thinking."
He raised his voice just a little, that voice so like Lancelot's, although overlaid with a soft North Country accent.
"In Avalon, cousin, we take our lineage from the line of the mother. I'm of the old royal line of Avalon. That is quite enough for me. It would be arrogance for any man to claim to be the father to the child of a high priestess of Avalon. But, of course, like most men, I would like to know who fathered me, and what you thought has been said before, that I am the son of Lancelot. That likeness has been remarked upon before this, especially among the Saxons, where I spent 3 years learning to be a warrior," he added. "Your reputation among them, Lord Lancelot, is still much remembered there. I couldn't count how many men said to me that it was no disgrace to be the bastard son of a man like you, sir."
His low chuckle was like an eerie echo of the man he faced, and Lancelot looked uneasy too.
"But in the end I always had to tell them that what they thought wasn't true. Of all the men in this kingdom who could have fathered me, one I know is not my father. And so I must inform them that it is only a family likeness, no more. I am your cousin, Galahad, not your brother."
He leaned lazily back in his chair.
"Will it embarrass you too much that everyone who sees us will think so? After all, we cannot go around telling everyone the truth."
Galahad looked confused.
"I wouldn't have minded if you were truly my brother, Gwydion." "But then I should have been your father's son, and perhaps the king's heir too," Gwydion said,
and smiled. And it struck Guinevere suddenly that he actually took pleasure in the discomfort of the people around the table,
that he was Morgaine's son, if only in that touch of malice.
Morgaine said, in that low voice which carried so clearly without being loud,
"It wouldn't have been displeasing to me either if Lancelot had fathered you, Gwydion."
"No, I suppose not, lady," Gwydion said.
"Forgive me, Lady Morgaine. Always I've called Queen Morgause my mother."
Morgaine laughed.
"If I seem an unlikely mother to you, Gwydion, you seem just as unlikely a son to me."
"I'm grateful for this family party, Guinevere," she said. "I might have been confronted with my son tomorrow at the great feast without warning."
Urien said, "I think any woman would be proud of such a son. And as to your father, whoever he may have been, young Gwydion, it is his own loss that he didn't claim you for his own."
"Oh, I don't think so," Gwydion said. And Guinevere thought, watching the small flicker of his eyes toward Arthur,
"He may say for some reason that he doesn't know who is his father, but he is lying."
Somehow, that made her uncomfortable. Yet how much more uncomfortable it would be if he were to face Arthur and demand to know why he, the son, wasn't also the heir.
Avalon, that accursed place. She wished it would sink into the sea like the lost land of Ys in the old tale, and never be heard of again.
"But this is Galahad's special night," Gwydion said, "and I'm taking attention away from him. Are you to watch by your arms this night, cousin?"
Galahad nodded.
"It is the custom for Arthur's companions." "I was the first," Gareth said, "and it's a good custom. I suppose it is the nearest a layman can come to being a priest, to take vows that he will always serve his king, and his land, and his god with his arms."
He laughed and said,
"What a fool of a boy I was. My lord Arthur, have you ever forgiven me, that I refused your offer to knight me with your own hands?" and instead asked that Lancelot might do so. "Forgiven you, lad. I envied you," Arthur said, smiling. "Do you think I didn't know Lancelot was the greatest warrior of us two?"
Kai spoke for the first time, his sombre, scarred face twisting in a smile.
"I told the lad then that he was a good fighter and would make a good knight, but he was certainly no courtier." "And so much the better," said Arthur heartily. "God knows I had enough of those."
He added, leaning forward, speaking directly to Galahad,
"Would you prefer that your father should knight you, Galahad? He has knighted enough of my companions."
The boy bowed his head.
"Sir, it is for my king to say. But it seems to me that this knighthood comes from God, and it doesn't matter who bestows it. I do not mean that quite as it sounds, sir. I mean the vow is made to you, but mostly to God."
Arthur nodded slowly.
"I know what you mean, my boy. It is much the same with a king. He vows to rule over his people, but the vow is given not to the people, but to God."
"Or," said Morgaine, "to the goddess in her name, as token of the land the king shall rule."
She looked directly at Arthur as she spoke, and he shifted his eyes, and Guinevere bit her lip. Morgaine, reminding Arthur again that his allegiance had been given to Avalon. Damn her! But that was past, and Arthur was a Christian king, under no authority but that of God.
"We will all be praying for you, Galahad, that you make a good knight, and that one day you will make a good king," said Guinevere.
"So, as you make your vows, Galahad," said Gwynion, "you are making, in some form, the same kind of sacred marriage to the land that the king used to make in the old days. But you will not, perhaps, be so hard tested."
The colour rose in the younger boy's face.
"My Lord Arthur came to the throne proved in battle, cousin. There is no way I can now be so tested."
"I could think of a way," said Morgaine softly. "And if you are to rule over Avalon as well as the Christian lands, one day you must come to that too, Galahad." He set his mouth firmly.
"May that time be far. Surely, my lord, you will live many, many years. By then all those old folk who still believe they must give allegiance to the pagan ways will have gone." "I trust not," said Accolon, speaking up for the first time in that company. "The sacred groves still stand, and in them the old ways are done as they have been done from the beginning of the world. We do not anger the goddess by denying her worship, lest she turn upon her people and blight the harvests, and darken the very sun that gives us life."
Galahad was startled.
"But this is a Christian land.
Have no priests come to you, to show you that the evil old gods among whom the devil had sway have no more power now? Bishop Patricius has told me that all the sacred groves have been cut down."
"Not so," said Accolon. "Nor will be while my father lives, or I after him."
Morgaine opened her mouth to speak, but Guinevere saw Accolon lay his hand on her wrist. She smiled at him and said nothing.
It was Gwydion who said, "Nor yet in Avalon, while the goddess lives. Kings come and kings go, but the goddess shall endure for ever."
"What a pity," Guinevere thought, "that this handsome young man should be a pagan. Well, Galahad is a good and pious Christian knight who will make a Christian king."
But as she reassured herself with that thought, a faint shiver went through her. As if Guinevere's thoughts disturbed him, Arthur leaned forward to Gwydion, and his face was troubled.
"Have you come to court to be one of my companions, Gwydion? I need not tell you that the son of my sister is welcome among my knights."
"I admit I brought him here for that," said Morgause, "but I didn't know that this was Galahad's great ceremonial. I wouldn't steal the lustre from this occasion.
Surely another time will do as well for that.
Galahad said ingenuously,
I wouldn't mind sharing my vigil and vows with my cousin.
Gwydion laughed.
You are too generous, kinsman, he said, but you know little of kingcraft. The king's heir must be proclaimed without any to share that moment. If Arthur should knight us both at the same time, and I am so much the older, and resemble Lancelot so much more, well, there is gossip enough about my parentage. It shouldn't shadow your knighthood as well. Nor, he added, laughing, my own.
Morgaine shrugged. They will gossip about the king's kin, whether or no, Gwydion. Let them have some morsel to chew on.
Yet another thing, Gwydion said lightly. I have no intent ever to watch by my arms in any Christian church. I am of Avalon. If Arthur will admit me among his companions for what I am, that will be well. And if not, that too will be well.
Uriens raised his knotty old arm so that the faded serpents could be seen.
I sit at the round table with no such Christian vow, stepson.
Nor I, said Gawain. We won our knighthoods, all of us who fought in those days, and needed no such ceremonial. Some of us would have been hard put to it, had knighthood been fenced about by such courtly vows as now.
Even I, Lancelot said, would be somewhat reluctant to take such vows, such a sinful man as I am.
But I am Arthur's man for life or death, and he knows it. God forbid I should ever doubt it, said Arthur, smiling with deep affection at his old friend. You and Gawain are the very pillars of my kingdom. If I should ever lose either of you, I think my throne would split and fall from the very top of Camelot.
He raised his head as a door opened at the far end of the hall, and a priest in white robes with two young men dressed in white came in. Galahad rose eagerly.
By your leave, my lord.
Arthur rose too and embraced his heir.
Bless you, Galahad. Go to keep your vigil.
The boy bowed and turned to embrace his father. Guinevere couldn't hear what Lancelot said to him. She reached out her hand, and Galahad bent to kiss it.
Give me your blessing, lady.
Always, Galahad, Guinevere said, and Arthur added,
We will see you to the church. You must keep your vigil alone, but we will come a little way with you.
You do me too much honour, my king. Did you not keep vigil when you were crowned?
He did indeed, said Morgaine, smiling. But it was far other than this. As the whole party moved toward the church, Gwydion dropped back until he was walking at Morgaine's side. She looked up at her son. He was not as tall as Arthur, who had the height of the Pendragons, but at her side he seemed tall. I hadn't expected to see you here, Gwydion.
I hadn't expected to be here, madam.
I heard that you had been fighting in this war among Arthur's Saxon allies. I knew not that you were a warrior. He shrugged.
You have had little opportunity to know much of me, lady.
Abruptly, not knowing what she was going to say until she heard herself saying it, she asked, Do you hate me that I abandoned you, my son? He hesitated.
Perhaps. For a time when I was young, he said at last. But I am a child of the goddess. And this forced me to be so in truth, that I could look to no earthly parents. I bear you no grudge now, Lady of the Lake, he said.
For a moment the path blurred around her. It was as if the young Lancelot stood at her side. Her son steadied her gently with his arm.
Take care. The path here isn't smooth.
She asked, How is it with all in Avalon?
Ninian is well, he said. I have few ties with any other there.
Not now.
Have you seen Galahad's sister there, the maiden called Nimue? She frowned, trying to remember how old Nimue would be now. Galahad was 16, Nimue would be at least 14, almost grown.
I know her not, said Gwydion. The old priestess of the oracles, Raven, is it, has taken her into the silence and into seclusion. No man may look upon her face.
I wonder why Raven did that. A sudden shudder went through her, but she said only, How does Raven, then? Is she well?
I haven't heard that she was otherwise, said Gwydion, though when I last saw her at the rites, she seemed older than the very oaks. Still, her voice was sweet and young, but I have never had private speech from her.
Morgaine said, Nor has any man living, Gwydion, and few women. 12 years I spent there as a maiden, and I heard her voice but half a dozen times. She didn't wish to speak or to think of Avalon, and said, trying to keep her voice commonplace,
So you have had battle experience with the Saxons?
True, and in Brittany.
I spent some time at Lionel's court. Lionel thought me Lancelot's son, and would have me call him uncle, and I told him nothing contrary. It will do Lancelot no harm to be thought capable of fathering a bastard or so. And even as with the good Lancelot, the Saxons round Shardig gave me a name. Elfaro, they call him. Any man who accomplishes anything gets a name from those folk. Mordred, they called me. It means in our tongue something like to deadly counsel, or even evil counsel, and I think not that they meant it as a compliment.
It takes not much craft in counsel to be wilier than a Saxon, she said. But tell me then, what prompted you to come here before the time I had chosen? Gwydion shrugged.
I felt I might well see my rival.
Morgaine glanced fearfully around her.
Say that not aloud. I have no reason to fear Galahad, he said quietly. He looks not to me like one who will live long enough to rule.
Is that the sight?
I need not the sight to tell me it would take one stronger than Galahad to sit on the throne of the Pendragon, Gwydion said. But if it will ease your mind, lady, I will swear to you by the sacred well Galahad will not die by my hand, nor, he added after a moment, seeing her shiver, by yours. If the goddess doesn't want him on the throne of the new Avalon, I think we may leave it to her.
He laid his hand for a moment on Morgaine's. Gentle as the touch was, she shivered again.
Come, he said.
And it seemed to Morgaine that his voice was as compassionate as a priest's giving absolution.
Let us go and see my cousin to his arms. It isn't right that anything should spoil this great moment of his life. He may not have many more.
Chapter 5. As often as Morgause of Lothian had come to Camelot, she never tired of the pageantry. Now, conscious that as one of Arthur's subject queens and the mother of three of his earliest companions, she would have a favoured place at the mock games which marked this day, she sat beside Morgaine in church. At the end of the service, Galahad would be knighted, and he knelt now beside Arthur and Guinevere, pale and serious and shining with excitement. Bishop Patricius himself had come from Glastonbury to celebrate the Pentecost Mass here in Camelot. He stood now before them in his white robes, intoning,
Unto thee have we offered this bread, the body of the only begotten.
Morgause put a plump hand over her mouth, smothering a yawn. However often she attended Christian ceremonies, she never thought about them. They weren't even as interesting as the rites at Avalon, where she had spent her childhood. But she had thought, since she was 14 or so, that all gods and all religions were games which men and women played with their minds. None of them had anything to do with real life. Nevertheless, when she was at Pentecost, she dutifully attended Mass to please Guinevere. The woman was her hostess, and the High Queen, after all, and a close relative. And now, with the rest of the royal family, she went forward to receive the holy bread. Morgaine, attentive at her side, was the only one in the king's household who did not approach the communion table. Morgause thought lazily that Morgaine was a very great fool. Not only did she alienate the common people, but the more pious among the king's household called Morgaine witch and sorceress, and worse things among themselves. And after all, what difference did it make? One religious lie was as good as another, was it not? King Urien's now, he had more sense of what was expedient. Morgause didn't think Urien's had any more religion than Guinevere's pet house cat. She had seen the serpents of Avalon around his arms, yet, like his son Accolon, he went forward to take part. But when the final prayer came, including one for the dead, she discovered that she had tears in her eyes. She missed Lot, his cynical cheerfulness, his steadfast loyalty to her, and he had, after all, given her 4 fine sons. Gawain and Gareth knelt near her, among Arthur's own household. Gawain, as always, close to Arthur. Gareth, side by side with his young friend Uwain, Morgaine's stepson. She had heard Uwain call Morgaine mother, heard a genuine maternal note in Morgaine's voice when she spoke to him, something she had never thought Morgaine capable of. With a rustle of gowns and the small chink of scabbarded swords and such gear, Arthur's household arose and moved to the church porch. Guinevere, though a little haggard, was still beautiful, with the long, bright golden braids over her shoulder, and her fine gown belted in with a brilliant golden girdle. Arthur looked splendid, too. Excalibur hung in its scabbard at Arthur's side, the same old red velvet scabbard he had worn for more than 20 years now. She supposed that Guinevere could have embroidered him a handsomer one at any time in the past 10 years. Galahad knelt before the king. Arthur took from Gawain a handsome sword and said, "For you, my dear kinsman and adopted son, this." He gestured to Gawain, who belted it around the boy's slender waist. Galahad looked up with his boyish smile and said clearly, "I thank you, my king. May I bear it only and always in your service." Arthur laid his hands on Galahad's head. He said, "I gladly receive you among the company of my companions, Galahad, and confer on you the order of knighthood. Be always faithful and just, and serve the throne and the righteous cause always." He raised the youngster, embraced him, and kissed him. Guinevere kissed him too, and the royal company went out toward the huge field, the others behind him. Morgause found herself walking between Morgaine and Gwydion, with Urien's, Accolon, and Uwain just behind them. The field had been decorated with green staves wound with ribbons and pennants, and the marshals of the games were pacing off the fighting areas. She saw Lancelot with Galahad, embracing him, and giving him a plain white shield. Morgause said, "Will Lancelot fight today?" Accolon said, "I think not. I heard he is to be master of the lists. He has won the field too many times. Between ourselves, he's no longer so young, and it would hardly suit the dignity of the Queen's champion to be unseated from his horse by some youth hardly made knight. I've heard that he's been beaten by Gareth more than once, and once by Lamorak." Morgause said, smiling, "I think well of Lamorak that he forbore to boast of that conquest. Few men could resist bragging that they had overcome Lancelot even in a mock battle." "No," said Morgaine quietly. "I think most young knights would be unhappy at the thought that Lancelot was no longer king of the field. He is their hero." Gwydion chuckled. "Do you mean that the young stags forbear to challenge the knight who is king stag among them?"
I think none of the older knights would do so, said Accolon. And of the young knights, there are few with enough strength or experience to challenge him.
If they did, he would show them a trick or two still.
I would not, said Uwain quietly. I think there is no knight at this court who does not love Lancelot. Gareth could overthrow him any time now, but he will not shame him at Pentecost, and he and Gawain have always been evenly matched. Once, at a Pentecost like this, they fought for more than an hour, and once Gawain knocked his sword from his hand. I do not know if I could best him in single combat, but he may stay champion while he lives, for all I will ever do to challenge it.
Challenge him some day, Accolon said, laughing. I did so, and he took all the conceit out of me in 5 minutes.
He may be old, but he has all his skill and strength.
He handed Morgaine and his father into the seats reserved for them.
By your leave, I will go and enter the lists before it is too late.
And I, said Uwain,
bending to kiss his father's hand. He turned to Morgaine.
I have no lady mother. Will you give me a token to bear into the lists?
Morgaine smiled indulgently, and gave him a ribbon from her sleeve, which he tied about his arm, saying,
I've arranged to challenge Gawain to a trial of strength.
Gwydion said with his charming smile,
Why, lady, you had better take back your favour. Would you have your honour so easily disposed of as that?
Morgaine laughed up at Accolon, and Morgawse, watching her face come alight, thought,
Uwain is her son, far more than Gwydion. But Accolon,
it is plain to see, is more than that.
I wonder if the old king knows, or cares. Lamorack was approaching them, and Morgawse felt warmed and complimented. There were many pretty ladies on the field. He could have a favour from any of them. Yet, before them all, before all Camelot, her dear young man would come and bow before her.
My lady, may I wear a token into battle?
With pleasure, my dear. Morgawse gave him the rose from the nosegay she wore at her bosom. He kissed the flower. She gave him her hand, pleasantly conscious that her young knight was one of the handsomest men there.
Lamorack seems enchanted by you, said Morgaine,
and although she had given her favour to him before the whole court, Morgawse felt herself blush at Morgaine's detached voice.
Do you think I have need of charms or spells, kinswoman?
Morgaine laughed. I should have used another word.
Young men seem mostly to want a fair face and little more.
Well, Morgaine, Accolon is younger than you, and you have certainly captivated him to the point where he has no desire for a younger woman, or a fairer one.
I am not the one to reproach you, my dear. You were married against your will, and your husband could be your grandsire.
Morgaine shrugged. Sometimes I think Urien's knows. Perhaps he is glad that I have a lover who will not tempt me to leave him.
A little hesitantly, she had never asked Morgaine any personal questions since Gwydion's birth, Morgawse said,
You and Urien's are at odds, then?
Morgaine gave again that indifferent shrug.
I think Urien's cares not enough for me to be at odds one way or the other.
How like you Gwydion?
Morgawse asked.
He frightens me, said Morgaine. Yet it would be hard not to be charmed by him.
What do you expect? He has Lancelot's beauty and your powers of mind, and he is ambitious as well.
How strange that you should know my son better than I do,
Morgaine said. And there was so much bitterness in the words that Morgawse, whose first instinct was to rap out a sharp reply, Morgaine had deserted her son, why should it surprise her? Patted the younger woman's hand and said, not unkindly,
Oh, my dear, once a son is grown out of your lap, I think anyone knows him better than his mother. I'm sure that Arthur and his companions, and even your Uwain, all know Gawain better than I do, and he's not even a hard man to understand. He's a perfectly simple man. If you had reared him from a babe, you still wouldn't understand Gwydion.
I freely confess that I do not.
Morgaine's only answer was an uneasy smile. She turned to look at the lists where the first events were starting. Arthur's fools and clowns were dancing about in ridiculous mock battles, flapping pig's bladders for weapons and cloth banners garishly painted in the place of shields until the watchers were guffawing at their capers. They bowed at last, and Guinevere, in an exaggerated parody of the gesture with which she would later bestow prizes to the real winners, flung them handfuls of sweets and cakes. They scrambled for them, to more laughter and applause, then capered away to the good dinner waiting for them in the kitchens. One of the criers called out that the first match would be a trial combat between the Queen's champion, Sir Lancelot of the Lake, and the King's, Sir Gawain of Lothian and the Isles. There was a tumult of applause as they came onto the field. Lancelot, slender, dark, and still so handsome, despite the lines in his face and the grey in his hair, that Morgaine felt her breath catch. "Yes," thought Morgawes, watching her younger kinswoman's face. "She loves him still, despite the years. Perhaps she doesn't know it herself, but there it is." The combat was like an elaborately choreographed dance, the two moving round one another, their swords and shields ringing loud. Morgawes couldn't see that either of them had the slightest advantage, and when at last they lowered their swords, bowed to the king, and embraced each other, they were cheered impartially and applauded without the slightest favouritism. Then came the horse games, demonstrations of fancy riding, a man riding an unbroken horse to master it. Morgawes faintly remembered a time when Lancelot had done some such thing, perhaps at Arthur's wedding. It seemed very long ago. After that there were individual duels on horseback with blunted spears, which could nevertheless unhorse a rider and give him a nasty spill into the field. One young rider fell twisted on his leg and was carried away screaming, the leg sticking out at an improbable angle. This was the only serious injury, but there were bruises, smashed fingers, men flung senseless to the ground, and one who barely escaped being kicked by a badly trained horse. Guinevere gave prizes at the end of all this, and Morgaine too was called by Arthur and asked to distribute several prizes. Accolon had won one of the prizes for riding, and as he came to kneel and accept the prize from Morgaine's hands, Morgawes was astonished to hear a low but perceptible hiss of disapproval somewhere in the stands. Someone softly but audibly whispered, "Witch! Harlot!" Morgaine coloured, but her hands didn't falter as she handed Accolon the cup. Arthur said in a low voice to one of his stewards, "Find out who that was." And the man slipped away, but Morgawes was sure that in such a crowd the voice would never be recognised. When Morgaine came back to her seat at the start of the second half of the entertainment, she looked pale and angry. Her hands, Morgawes noted, were shaking, and her breath coming fast in her throat. "My dear, don't worry about it," said Morgawes. "What do you think they call me? When it's a year of poor crops, or when someone has had justice done to him and would rather have gotten away with his villainy. Do you think I care what that rabble think of me?" Morgaine said scornfully, but Morgawes knew her indifference was pretended. "I am loved well enough in my own country." The second half of the games began with some Saxon churls demonstrating the art of wrestling. They were huge, hairy men, hair not only on their faces, but all over their near-naked bodies. They grunted and strained and heaved with hoarse cries, grappling and wrenching with bone-cracking strength. Morgawes leaned forward, shamelessly enjoying the sight of their male strength. But Morgaine turned her eyes away in squeamish distaste. "Oh, come, Morgaine, you are growing as prudish as the Queen." "What a face!" Morgawes shaded her eyes with her hand and glanced down to the field.
I think the mock battle is about to begin. Look, is that Gwydion? What can he be doing?
Gwydion had leapt into the field, and waving away the crier who hurried to him, called out in a strong, clear voice which could be heard clearly from one end of the field to another,
King Arthur!
Morgore saw that Morgaine had sunk back white as death, and was clutching the rails with both hands.
What was the lad about?
Was he going to make a scene here before half of Arthur's people, demanding the acknowledgement that was his?
Arthur rose, and Morgore thought that he too looked uneasy, but his voice was ringing clear.
Yes, nephew. I have heard that it is customary at these games to allow a challenge if the king is willing. I ask now if Sir Lancelot will meet me for a challenge fight.
Lancelot had once said, Morgause remembered this, that such challenges were the bane of his existence. Every young knight wanted to master the queen's champion. Arthur's voice was grave.
It is customary, but I cannot speak for Lancelot. If he agrees to this match, I cannot refuse him. But you must challenge him directly, and abide by his answer.
Morgause said, Oh, damn the boy! I had no idea this was what he had in mind.
But Morgaine somehow felt she was not so displeased, after all. A wind had come up, and dust from the field was blowing, blurring the summer glare of the dry, white clay of the field. Gwydion walked through the dust to the end of the lists, where Lancelot was sitting on a bench. Morgause couldn't hear what either of them said. But Gwydion turned angrily and shouted,
My lords, I heard always that a champion's duty is to meet with all comers. Sir, I demand that Lancelot now meet my challenge or yield up his high office to me.
Does he hold his post because of his skill at arms, or for some other reason, my lord Arthur? I wish, said Morgause, that your son were still young enough to have his breeches well dusted, Morgaine.
Why blame him? Asked Morgaine. Why not blame Guinevere for making her husband so vulnerable?
Everyone in this kingdom knows she favours Lancelot, yet no one cries out witch or harlot when she comes before the people.
But Lancelot, below them, had risen and strode to Gwydion. He brought back his gloved hand and struck the younger man smartly across the mouth.
Now indeed you have given me cause to chastise your ungentle tongue, young Gwydion. We will see who refuses combat now.
I came here for that, said Gwydion,
unmoved by blow or words, though there was a small trickle of blood on his face.
I will even grant you first blood, Sir Lancelot. It is fitting that a man of your years should have some advantage.
Lancelot spoke to one of his marshals who came to take his place as master of the lists. There was a considerable murmuring in the stands as Lancelot and Gwydion took swords and faced the king for the ritual bow which began the contest. Morgause thought, If there is a man in that crowd who doesn't believe that they are father and son, he must have poor eyesight. The two men raised swords to each other, their faces now hidden by helmets. They were within an inch of the same height. The only difference between them was between Lancelot's battered old breastplate and armour and Gwydion's newer, unstained gear. They circled one another slowly, then rushed in, and for a moment Morgause lost track of the separate strokes, which were nearly too fast for the eye to follow. She could see that Lancelot was taking the younger man's measure, and after a moment he pressed hard and struck a mighty blow. Gwydion caught it on the side of his shield, but the force behind it was so enormous that he reeled, lost his balance, and measured his length on the field. He began to scramble up. Lancelot put his sword aside and went to help the young man to his feet. Morgause couldn't hear what he said, but the gesture was good-natured, something like, "Had enough, youngster." Gwydion pointed to the trickle of blood down Lancelot's wrist from a small cut he had managed to inflict. His voice was clearly audible.
"You drew first blood, sir, and I second. Shall we decide it with one more fall?"
There was a small storm of hissing and disapproval. First blood in these demonstration matches, since the contestants fought with sharp weapons, was supposed to end the fight. King Arthur rose in his place.
"This is a festival, and a courtesy challenge, not a duel. I will have no settling of grudges here, unless you fight with fists or cudgels. Continue if you will, but I warn you, if there is a serious wounding, you will both be under my gravest displeasure."
They bowed and moved apart, circling for their advantage. Then they rushed together, and Morgause gasped, watching the fierceness of it. It seemed that at any moment one or the other might rush in under the shield and inflict a mortal wound. One of them had gone to his knees, a rain of blows on the shield, the swords locked together in a deadlock, and one was borne closer and closer to the ground. Guinevere rose and cried out, "I will have this go no further." Arthur cast his baton into the lists. By custom, a fight was instantly stopped when that happened, but neither man saw, and the marshals had to pull them apart. Gwydion stood fresh and erect, smiling as he pulled off his helmet. Lancelot's squire had to help the older man to his feet. He was breathing hard, sweat and blood pouring down his face. There was a perfect storm of hissing, even from the other knights on the field. Gwydion had added nothing to his popularity by shaming the hero of the people. But he bowed to the older knight.
"I am honoured, Sir Lancelot. I came to this court a stranger, not even one of Arthur's companions, and I am grateful to you for a lesson in sword play."
His smile was the very reflection of Lancelot's own.
"Thank you, sir."
Lancelot managed to summon from somewhere his old smile. It exaggerated the resemblance between them almost to the point of caricature.
"You bore yourself most bravely, Gwydion."
"Then," said Gwydion, kneeling before him in the dust of the field,
"I beg of you, sir, grant to me the order of knighthood."
Morgause caught her breath. Morgaine sat as if she'd been turned to stone. But from where the Saxons sat, there was a burst of cheering.
"Crafty counsel indeed! Clever! Clever! How can they refuse you now, lad, when you have stood up well to combat with their own champion?"
Lancelot glanced at Arthur. The king sat paralysed, seeming frozen. But after a moment, he nodded. Lancelot gestured to his squire, who brought a sword. Lancelot took it and belted it around Gwydion's waist.
"Bear this always in the service of your king and of the righteous cause," said the old knight.
He was deadly serious now. All the mockery and defiance had gone from Gwydion's face. He looked grave and sweet, his eyes raised to Lancelot, and Morgause saw that his lips were trembling. Sudden sympathy for him rose in Morgause. Bastard, not even an acknowledged one. He was even more of an outsider than Lancelot had been. Who could blame Gwydion for the ruse by which he had forced his kinsman to notice him? She thought, "We should have taken him long since to Arthur's court, had him privately acknowledged, even if Arthur couldn't do so publicly. A king's son shouldn't have to do this." Lancelot laid his hands on Gwydion's brow.
"I confer on you the honour of a companion of the Round Table, by permission of our king. Serve him always. And since you have won this honour by craft rather than brute strength, though indeed you have shown that too well enough, I name you among this company not Gwydion, but Mordred. Rise, Sir Mordred, and take your place among the companions of Arthur."
Gwydion? No, Mordred, Morgause remembered. For the naming of a companion was a rite not much less serious than baptism. rose, and heartily returned Lancelot's embrace.
He seemed deeply moved, almost unhearing the cheers and applause. His voice broke as he said,
"Now I have won the prize of the day. Whoever is judged winner in these games, my Lord Lancelot."
"No," Morgaine said quietly at Morgause's side. "I do not understand him. That is the last thing I would have expected."
There was a long pause before the companions ranged themselves for the final mock battle. Some went to drink water or swallow a hasty bite of bread. Some gathered in little knots, arguing about which side they should take in the final games. Others went to see to their horses. Morgause went down to the field where a few of the young men lingered, Gareth among them. He towered over the others by half a head, making him easy to pick out. She thought he was talking to Lancelot, but when she came closer, she discovered her sight had deceived her. He was facing Gwydion, and his voice sounded angry. She caught only the last few words.
"What harm has he ever done you? To make a fool of him before the whole field?"
Gwydion laughed and said, "If our cousin needs protection before a whole field of his friends, God help Lancelot when he falls among the Saxons or the Northmen. Come, foster brother, I doubt not he can protect his own reputation."
"Is that all you have to say to me after all these years, brother, to chide me that I've distressed someone you love so well?"
Gareth laughed, and caught Gwydion into a great hug. He said,
"Same reckless young one, you are... What put it into your head to do that? Arthur would have made you knight if you'd asked him."
Morgause remembered. Gareth didn't know all the truth about Gwydion's parentage. No doubt he meant only, "because you are his sister's son." Gwydion said,
"I'm sure of it. He's always kind to his kinsmen. He would have made you knight, Gareth, for Gawain's sake, but you took not that road either, foster brother."
He chuckled.
"And I think Lancelot owes me something for all those years I have walked about wearing his face."
Gareth shrugged ruefully.
"Well, it seems he bears you no grudge, so I suppose I too must forgive you. Now you too have seen how great-hearted he is."
"Aye," said Gwydion softly.
"He is so..."
Then raised his head and saw Morgause.
"Mother, what do you hear? How may I serve you?"
"I came only to greet Gareth, who has not spoken with me this day," said Morgause.
And the big man bent to kiss his mother's hand. She asked him,
"How will you fight in the mock battle?"
"As always," said Gareth, "I fight at Gawain's side, in the king's men." "You have a horse for fighting, do you not, Gwydion? Will you fight with the king's side, then? We can make a place for you."
Gwydion said, with his dark, enigmatic smile,
"Since Lancelot made me knight, I suppose I should fight with the army of Sir Lancelot of the Lake, and at Accolon's side for Avalon. But I will not take the field at all today, Gareth."
"Why not?"
Gareth asked, and laid his hand on the younger man's shoulder, looking down at him as he had always done. Morgause thought of a younger Gareth, smiling down at his little brother.
"It is expected of those who have been made knight. Galahad will fight among us, you know." "And which side will he take?"
Gwydion asked.
"His father Lancelot's, or that of the king who has made him heir to his kingdom? Is that not a cruel test of his loyalties?"
Gareth looked exasperated.
"How then would you divide the armies for the mock battle, save by the two greatest knights among us? Do you think either Lancelot or Arthur believes it a test of loyalties? Arthur will not take the field himself, just so that no man will have to make the choice whether to strike at his king. But Gawain has been his champion since he was crowned. Are you going to rake up the old scandal? You?"
Gwydion shrugged.
since I'm not intending to join either force. But what will they think of you? That you're cowardly, that you shrink from combat?
I have fought enough in Arthur's armies that I care not what they say, said Gwydion.
But if you wish, you may tell them that my horse has gone lame, and I have no wish to risk more injury to him. That is an honourable excuse.
I would lend you a horse of Gawain, Gareth said, puzzled. But if you wish for an honourable excuse,
do what you will.
But why, Gwydion?
Or must I now call you Mordred?
You shall call me always what you will, foster brother. But will you not tell me why you shirked the fight, Gwydion?
None other but you could speak that word unchallenged, said Gwydion. But since you ask me, I will tell you. It is for your sake, brother.
Gareth scowled at him.
What in God's name do you mean? I know little of God, or care to, said Gwydion, and stared down at his feet. Since you will know, brother, you know from old, I have the sight.
Aye, and what of it? Asked Gareth impatiently.
Have you had some ill dream that I will fall before your lance?
No.
Make not a jest of it, said Gwydion, and Morgause felt ice go through her veins as he turned up his face to Gareth.
It seemed to me...
He swallowed as if his throat closed against the words he would speak.
It seemed to me that you lay dying, and I knelt at your side, and you would not speak to me.
And I knew it was my doing you lay without the spark of life.
Gareth pursed his lips and whistled soundlessly.
But then he clapped his foster brother on the shoulder. Nay, but I put small faith in dreams and visions, youngster. And fate, no man can escape.
Did they not teach you that in Avalon?
Aye, Gwydion said softly.
And if you fell, even at my hand in battle, fate then it would be.
But I will not tempt that fate in play, my brother. Some ill chance may guide my hand to strike amiss. Let it be, Gareth. I will not take the field this day. Let them say what they will.
Gareth still looked distressed.
Well, do as you will, lad. Stay beside our mother, then, since Lamorak will take the field beside Lancelot.
He bent to kiss his mother's hand and went. Morgause, frowning, started to ask Gwydion what he had seen, but he was scowling, staring at the ground, and she forbore, saying only,
"Well, if I'm to have a young courtier to sit beside me, will you bring me a dipper of water before I go to my seat again?"
"Certainly, mother," he said,
and went off toward the water-butts.
To Morgause, the final scrimmage battle was always something of a blur.
Her head had begun to ache with the sun, and she was eager for it to be over. She was hungry, too, and could smell from a distance the meat roasting in the pits.
Gwydion sat beside her and explained it to her, though she knew little of the fine points of fighting, nor cared to. But she did note that Galahad acquitted himself well, unseating two riders. She was a little surprised. He seemed so gentle a boy. But then Gareth, too, had seemed a gentle child to her, and he was the most fearsome of fighters. At the end he took the prize on the king's side, where Gawain was at the head of the fighting. To no one's surprise, Galahad won the prize on Lancelot's side. This was customary for a young man who had been knighted that day, and she said so.
"You could have had a prize too, Gwydion," she said. But he laughed and shook his head.
"I need it not, mother. Why spoil this day for my cousin? And Galahad fought well. No one begrudges him the prize."
There were many smaller prizes, and when they were all given, the knights went to be sluiced with buckets of water from head to toe by their squires, and to put on fresh clothing.
Morgause went with the ladies of the king's household to a room put at their disposal, where they could arrange their gowns and hair, and wash off the dust and